Next is the uncontested item 11, and I do have two speaker cards for this particular item, so I do believe that the proper order is to ask for these two parties to bring their comment forth to this.
Right, well, we're gonna pull the item from the consent calendar and hear their comments.
So I will start.
So how about I introduce the item and then we can go to,
absolutely.
And then we can go to either board questions or public comment, depending on the board's interest. So item 11 is, it establishes total maximum daily loads for nitrogen and phosphorus compounds in the streams of the Franklin Creek watershed in the Carpinteria area by way of resolution R3-2018-0006. The item was prepared by Water Board staff Larry Harlan and Jennifer M. The proposed TMDL for nitrogen and phosphorus compounds will address nitrate impairment and biostimulatory conditions within the Franklin Creek watershed. And then staff recommends approval of this item, and we'll take questions and comments on this.
All right, thank you. So we'll call first Mr. Ben Peterling.
Good morning, thanks. I'm going to try to be 3 minutes. Ben Peterling, the Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. I just have two quick points to make. I'll start just by saying, so I actually live currently in the Franklin Creek watershed. I live on an organic avocado orchard. And just because of my time in Carpinteria and the work I do, I'm fairly familiar with the types of agriculture that occur there. The TMDL, I think, appropriately identifies irrigated agriculture as the primary source of nutrients. It's the main land use, surrounding the creek. I want to commend Larry, regional board staff over the last few years, or a couple of years since this has been in development. Larry was very communicative, reached out. I went and toured the watershed with him early on and participated in multiple public workshops that were held. I will say that from the very beginning, one of the key points that I wanted to make was that if the TMDL relies on the ag waiver as the sole source of implementation to achieve the targets, it's not going to work. Okay, so the ag waiver, and unfortunately, the first point I would make is that we're disappointed to see that it does rely pretty much entirely on ag waiver implementation. The ag waivers for the last 10 years, at least water quality in Franklin Creek's pretty much remained the same, somewhere between 10, 20 milligrams per liter. The ag waiver's obviously been implemented during that period. If you walk up, I've had experiences where I walk up the creek in the summer, it's dry, you walk down an hour later, and these little foot drains are discharging water. It's clear that's some kind of type of irrigation, or there's placement of water on the soil above, and it's percolating within a short period of time, within a few minutes, or within a period of a few hours, and it discharges to the creek. Okay, so we're talking about very, like, extremely shallow surface groundwater interaction occurring, and I'm concerned that there just aren't any monitoring components in the current iteration of the ag waiver that would assure that these targets are going to be met. The second point I want to make is that the timeline, 10 years to achieve the 10 milligram per liter standard and 25 years to achieve the biostimulatory standard. Again, we're talking about the top 5 feet of soil. It wouldn't take 10 years, to make significant improvements in water quality. If there were actual, strict monitoring reporting requirements. Whether those can be incorporated into this TMDL somehow, or whether or not those need to be incorporated into the next iteration of the ag waiver, one way or another, as it's written, it's just this team yet will not achieve result in, you know, the water quality achievement on the targets that we're looking for. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for your comment. Next will be Mr. Schimmick, 3 minutes also.
Good morning. My name is Steve Schimmick with the Otter Project in Monterey Coast Keeper. Thank you for your service. I say that both to board members and to staff. I hope I'm considered at least a friendly acquaintance to both board and staff. And pretty much everybody knows me and knows in some ways probably what I'm going to say. We share a vision to protect and restore water. We share that vision. This TMDL does little to advance that vision. It continues a pattern of relying upon the ag order. And I think you have to look back and say, how long has this pattern gone on? And what this pattern really means, and if it's being effective. There have been 26 TMDLs that reference the ag order as the implementation mechanism, at least 26. And the first was actually in 2004, when the ag order was incredibly weak, really did little. A parallel example to this TMDL on nutrients is the San Luis Obispo Creek TMDL, which was passed in 2006, relied upon the ag order. It set a date for resolution of the TMDL as 2012, and in 2013, as required in the TMDL program, I believe, it gave itself a report, a failing grade as a report card. So it did not work relying upon the ag order. Now, perhaps you can say, well, we're going to rely on future ag orders. I just ask you, how do you know what future ag orders are going to say? You really don't. I think you have a staff that is well-meaning, but as we saw in the last ag order, literally on the 11th day, hour of the 11th day, on March 15th, you pulled the limitation on nutrient balancing. There was still reporting, but there was no longer the requirement to achieve. So that's what the ag orders do. They have no metrics for load allocations. They have none. And that's what this process is a load allocation. And there is nothing in the ag order that limits any discharge. There is monitoring. But there are no limits to any discharges in the ag order except for recitations of the basin plan. In the past, you've passed TMDLs for biostimulatory substances, nutrients, sediment, sediment toxicity, which is pyrethroids, and some of these are in development. And let's take that one for pyrethroids. There's no even mention of pyrethroids in the ag order. But yet you put a TMDL saying the implementation mechanism will be that the ag order. So my point is the TMDLs are an inappropriate implementation mechanism. I'm not arguing against TMDLs. I'm arguing against hanging them on the ag order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schimmick. So we certainly... You know, my colleague's going to ask a question, but I would like to hear from staff also, you know, respond to these questions, which may further help our, you know, board get our hands around. So why don't we get comments from you on those two speakers?
So there were several points. So Jennifer Rapp with the TMDL program manager, there were several points brought up. Is there something specific that you want us to touch on? Maybe you can guide us on what you'd like us to respond to, and that would help us.
Well, I mean, there were several points they made, so you could respond on those several points.
Okay, we'll take a stab at it.
Okay.
Larry Harlan. With regard to the comment by Ben Peverly about the agricultural order, monitoring components of the agricultural order may be insufficient to help guide us in determining improvements in the water body. We are currently monitoring their monthly two monitoring stations as a result of the cooperative monitoring program and as our coastal confluence. So there's two monitoring sites monitored monthly. The last 3 months, we've seen challenges due to the fires, the floods, and more recently, high flow conditions that prevented us. But we feel that the agricultural order provides us with all the information we need through the monitoring program for that. Also, with regard to a comment by Mr. Bailey about the timing, we're looking to, our first milestone is to attain the municipal water quality objective of 10 milligrams per liter nitrate as in 10 years. All data available to us, let me emphasize that the primary source of nitrate in the watershed is groundwater. All existing USGS studies and other studies nationwide indicate it takes several decades to realize any improvement in surface water quality conditions when groundwater is primary source. There are two citations in the Tyndale report referencing those studies indicating it takes decades most often for that to happen. If we were to have information that would include fairly intensive groundwater basin studies that would have tracer studies, flow pathway studies, generally a mass balance type of approach to studies, that would indicate it would take a shorter period of time, we would really like to entertain that and pursue that. We would like more than anyone to see it, the timelines be a lot quicker. Those are the main points I've got from Mr. Bitterly.
So the thing I might add is that Steve talked about the TMDL not being the appropriate implementation mechanism, and just a big picture concept on that. So TMDLs are not implementation mechanisms. So the TMDL establishes what is necessary in order to address the impairment. So there's a known impairment, what would things need to look like, and then TMDLs by necessity rely on the permits, like the agricultural order, the stormwater permits, et cetera, to be the implementation mechanism.
So if I could add to that, Mr. Schimmick said, I'm paraphrasing, there's a pattern of relying on the ag order for TMDL implementation. That's completely appropriate. I think maybe what he would say is, yes, John, but the ag order is inadequate. I would say through time, the ag order is stepping forward. It, as with any program, it is a relatively new program. It's this incremental increase in regulatory expectation or height. As we see in the evolution from Ag Order 1 to Ag Order 2, and to some degree with Ag Order 3 as well, and we anticipate with Ag Order 4, it's a step-by-step process in terms of reining in a generation or more of water quality discharge or water quality impairing discharges. It's not just a light switch experience where you snap it on and it changes instantaneously.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, I certainly will entertain questions and comments that my fellow board members have. So let's see, I'll start on my right with Mr. Johnson.
Okay, so responding to or trying to digest Mr. Schimmick's comments that we've tied double-digit numbers of TMDL's implementation to the ag order and the problem's still not solved. On the surface, I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Robertson that certainly if we thought that we had arrived at an ag order that provided the complete suite of long-term solutions to the water quality issues you know, that the agricultural industry brings to the Central Coast, we would simply be considering a renewal rather than a 4.0. I don't think that's our direction. I guess my question for staff would be, okay, so I get that TMDLs are not implementation mechanisms. They're definitions of the problem and definitions of what a solved problem looks like. And I guess my question is, in response to Mr. Schimmick, do we really have other implementation mechanisms available to us other than to continue to work on improving the ag waiver? And if so, what do those look like?
Well, TMDLs can use any of the waterborne's regulatory authorities, and so it could look like a variety of different things. The most common thing is that they are implemented through the main permits and programs that are established. And if you think about a different solution that could be potentially more challenging for the agricultural community. So say we decide that this TMDL wasn't going to utilize, the ag program was going to utilize a different regulatory tool. We're going to issue a cleanup and abatement order. We're going to do something different. Then the agricultural community has two different things that they're dealing with. And so from a programmatic perspective, it's really most appropriate to utilize the main regulatory tools that we're using for agriculture to address the agricultural issues in a TMDL.
Okay, so you're telling me why the ag waiver is the most appropriate tool to address it, but that doesn't really answer my question. My question is, what is the range of tools that are available to us? And it sounds like one of them would actually be to put some, it sounds from what you said like one of them would be to put some actual implementation language in the TMDL, is that correct?
No.
Yeah,
then I misunderstood you.
No, so the TMDL are always just plans. They're never regulatory in themselves. They can suggest that an implementation program consists of any of our regulatory tools that we have at our disposal. So that could be any. Prohibitions of discharges are sometimes used.
Right. So the suite of tools that we would have available to us besides the ag waiver would be?
Individual waste discharge requirements, cleanup and individualized or general cleanup and abatement order, maybe potentially a basin plan prohibition.
Okay.
Cease and desist order potentially too.
But any of those would... And so the objection I heard from Mr. Schimmick was that the TMDL relies upon the ag waiver for implementation. I assume that if we approve this TMDL with its reliance upon the ag waiver for implementation, that we still have all of those other options available to us. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
And we also have that option available in the future. So if we rely on the ag order and the ag order doesn't work, we can always reevaluate other options.
Okay, I'll continue on my right. Dr. Hunter and Ms. Young.
I just want to make an observation. I think, you know, the TMDL process, as noted, is a plan and recognizes particular conditions, so characterizes those problematic surface water quality problems with identifying specific pollutants. And then once that's in place, then the information that's laid out then gets worked into other program permits and other ways in which we regulate discharge. So I think the fact that we have the ag order and we do always comment on the fact that the TMDL is going to rely on the ag order primarily is often the result of the extent of agriculture that we have, agricultural operations that we have in our region, which is substantial. And so I think the opportunity then with each TMDL, we have the opportunity then to specifically identify the way in which the monitoring and reporting occurs. And that is really all the authority that we have. We can't tell dischargers how they are going to meet the order, how they're going to reduce the discharge of particular pollutants, but we can monitor and then identify sources. Non-point source is the most complicated type of pollution to monitor. And so, you know, frankly, I agree that we'd like to see changes occurring faster than 10 or 15 years, but thank you, Larry, for reminding us that nationally, the trends, or not trends, not a good word, the pattern for restoring water quality is lengthy. And, you know, I think our regulated community is under tremendous, the onus is clearly on dischargers to determine how they're going to minimize their contribution to the water quality problem. And so by pinpointing it and specifically stating what the load issues are and allowing our permittees hopefully to work with staff in addition as technical support. So I'm, you know, I agree that it's frustrating, but I don't see that we're missing or lacking any of our opportunities to increase the or improve water quality in these locations that are identified or targeted for TMDLs.
Thank you,
Mr. Young.
Thank you. So we had TMDLs because of not state law, but because of federal law. It's this requirement that we go through this process. I've always thought it kind of odd that we create a planning document and that they just pile up on the shelf. And I've often wondered, well, how do they get implemented and who's going to do the work on it? And, you know, on one hand, we're required to go ahead and do the planning documents. And on the other hand, we may not have the resources to carry out ideally what we would like to do, which is the implementation. So we've got the TMDLs, and I look at them as simply a load allocation process pertaining to the known sources of contamination. And it's appropriate that the ag order implements those pollutants that we know come from irrigated ag. And I think that to the degree that our ag orders do not adequately implement the requirements of the TMDL, I think we need to be looking at that. And certainly, as we go forward into this next iteration of our ag orders, I think that we need to be, staff needs to be paying particular attention to this. Because I think at this juncture, it's about time that we start to get our hands around this issue and the issues of the load allocations. And I would encourage, you know, members of the public to hold our feet to the fire when this comes up for review so we can be reminded of this discussion. I would take a little different view, Mr. Harlan, of whether groundwater is the source of the nitrate contamination where we have certainly, you know, citrus growing and avocado. How is the excess nutrients getting into the groundwater? Is my question to you. It's got to be coming from the surface. It's from the surface application.
Surface application.
Right. So I would suggest that we could be doing more towards cutting off the supply of excess nutrients to groundwater by addressing the sources. And I think it is kind of like pushing this to the back burner and relying on this generalized concept of, well,
you know, EPA says it'll take decades to get this resolved. I think we already have experience in this region with a very similar problem that occurred with a farming operation in the Morro Bay area. And it happened to be one of our former board members, if you recall, who had an ag operation and was discharging a little bit too much fertilizer, and it was showing up in groundwater. Does that ring a bell at all, Mr. Robertson?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, my recollection, and I don't know that it came before us as an agenda item, was that we were able to have that discharger dialed down and keep better track of the application of fertilizer. And we saw an immediate response in the groundwater. Is that
right? Right. No, I think that's an accurate representation of that that scenario. Speaking as a hydrogeologist, that's a relatively unique sort of, I'll use the term again, kind of a light switch. You turn off the nutrient source and groundwater cleans up fairly fast. It happens. But it's more the exception than the rule with respect to groundwater and travel times associated with groundwater pollutant travel times. I think you raise an outstanding point of what's going on in the land use right now. Are we still continuing to overload application now such that groundwater is continuing to be loaded in that area, in the Carpentaria Franklin Creek, in this case, area? I know, having worked in this area for 20 years ago, that was the narrative too, was that there is excess nitrate in groundwater there, and 101 is serving as a bit of a dam, and so it's coming close to the surface there. You know, groundwater is surfacing upland of the freeway there, so it's discharging to the creeks in Franklin and other creeks. So I also want to circle back to a point that you made, and I actually had written it down and circled it on my notes, is that as we built a 4.0, I would ask the board and stakeholders to hold us accountable for evaluating the existing TMDLs that point at agriculture as a source, and make sure that we are bringing those in or dealing with those in 4.0. And then that's on us to evaluate the existing TMDLs such that we are addressing the sources with 4.0, our recommendations to the board in 4.0. So I think that's also a great point.
So if I could just finish up my thought here, I mean, I'm aware that this example I'm using was unique, and it was fairly shallow groundwater, which had, I think, a clay layer down below that was preventing, you know, much of this from getting any deeper. But it does kind of make my point somewhat that I don't want to generalize across the board that we should just be dismissing what's going on in the Carpentaria area as the norm in terms of, well, it's in groundwater, so we, you know, can't expect any improvement for a long time. Because I don't think that's true. And I think perhaps we should be looking at solving that problem a little more creatively with looking at, you know, the discharge points and maybe having a different kind of monitoring going on where we can see improvement from the discharges themselves. Given that it may actually take a long time for groundwater to show an improvement, but I think if we're going to be checking on how well the BMPs are working, maybe there should be some better fine-tuned monitoring going on so that we know we're going to achieve compliance in groundwater in time. So now, getting back to something you raised, I think it's a great idea as we move into 4.0 to for us to be reminded of what we have already put into our loading allocations and all of these TMDLs, so that we can kind of be reminded of, well, we're implementing all this stuff in this order, 4.0. are we doing that? We're really doing that. And if we're not, then let's have a discussion about why we're not. And if we are, let's have a discussion about how we're really doing it. I mean, there's a whole host of things with these TMDLs that require on this particular order for implementation. So let's really look at it in an objective way.
I agree with that. I mean, the collective TMDLs have kind of set up a scope of work for us, right? A portion of the scope of work for 4.0, such that that's the implementation device for correcting those observed water quality impacts. So let's surface that. Are we covering all of the existing TMDLs with our recommended requirements in 4.0 that we put in front of the board ultimately? Yeah. I agree with that point. I also want to circle back on one other thing that you said. You made a comment about developing TMDLs and just, in a sense, stacking up these load allocation observations and letting that kind of be the end of it without respect for implementation. Some of our funding there comes from the US EPA federal funding sources. And we had a conversation this year. I had a conversation this year with Region 9, the head of water at Region 9 in San Francisco, Tomas Torres. And there is has been this conventional wisdom that we are about development, not about implementation with federal funds. And I asked that question.
Okay, please continue.
So his response, Mr. Torres's response, was that we could actually move from strictly development with federal resources, federal TMDL resources, towards implementation, co-opt those resources more towards, or reassign them more towards implementation with the mindset of more at irrigated lands, because that represents such a dominant majority of the TMDLs that we've developed with respect to the source. So we at staff level have recognized that just simply developing TMDLs isn't satisfying or enough. We need to find better ways to resource the implementation side of the equation too. And EPA has said on email, we support you going there with the federal portion of your TMDL funds. So
good.
We're moving in that direction.
If I could ask something of the chair, as part of part of staff's preparation for 4.0 as they work on it, that perhaps they could develop a table for us that simply has a list of the TMDLs, the contaminant, pollutant, and then where specifically they're proposing that we address the implementation of that. I think it would just help everybody and me to keep track of what's going on.
Right. That's exactly what we were just talking about, was sort of mapping it back to the inside of 4.0, mapping back to the existing TMDLs.
Thank you, Dr. Devil.
You're welcome, Mr. Young. And adding to that also, you know, the timetables, because these TMDLs have multiple implementation dates, you know, end of tenure dates, and so that would help correlate that too. So thank you for your input, and Mayor Delgado.
Thank you. To Ben and Steve, thank you for commenting. If you hadn't spoken up, we wouldn't have had this discussion, and I think it's helpful. The matrix of existing TMDLs that we're talking about having at our disposal when we're discussing 4.0, and Chair mentioned that they all have milestones, I would hope that the matrix could show which timeline milestones are being met, which ones are not being met, so we, unless we have some other method of having a scorecard. Do we have any scorecards in any other TMDLs? Is that something we do regularly?
Yes.
is we develop report cards every year for three TMDLs and report on the status of how they're doing.
Okay. So if there's, let's say, 25 TMDLs, it might take 8 years before we get through the whole set of existing TMDLs to see the scorecards. So each year, do those three scorecards each year come through the board?
Yes. In fact,
there is in my email box, there is a link to this year's batch, and I will forward that to the board.
Okay.
Report cards on I believe it's three team deals.
Yes.
Okay, and I assume the staff would be very excited to find out that our board was going to figure out a way to give them the army they need to more closely sleuth after the thousands of discharge points. I share your excitement. I hope that we can help you with that. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Gray?
I'm satisfied. You all have done a good, thorough job, so I'm left with nothing to ask.
Okay. So, I think this was very constructive. Reflecting on a few minutes ago, I appreciate the civility of our two speakers on how you express your discontentment. But I guess one area that I would like to see in the future, perhaps seizing the opportunity at an earlier stage, is that, today is basically this agenda item contested. But I look back at public involvement. When we started this process 2 years ago, we had scoping sessions, including the City of Carpinteria staff. We had the County of Santa Barbara staff. We had representative of Santa Barbara Channel Keepers, representative from University of California Natural Reserve System, representative of commercial farms, orchards, greenhouse nurseries, and ranches, and lastly, other individuals and local residents. So there were all these meetings and workshops. And then I looked at public comment, and there were none. So, I'm not trying to put our speakers here in a, bit of a spot here, but this is coming when the train left the station, and I think the whole process here is doing why we have these public workshops is please bring us your input, because now we're sort of last minutes, let's do this, let's do that. And I'm not just talking about the TMDL, but as we move with workshops associated with 4.0, which has been a big part of our conversation here, I would be very chagrined to see last minute, when it's the big day of vote, to to daylight some items of significant concerns. So I do appreciate inputs, but in this instance, I just couldn't resist seeing the lack of feedback that would help staff. Did you have something to say, Mr.?
Yeah, I thank you for that comment. So in not respecting the public participation process, not availing themselves of the opportunity when the opportunity window happens, we are all less efficient. The effect of that requires staff to create this secondary response feedback channel, which is less efficient. Ultimately, and I'm going to circle back to Mr. Schimmick's comment. I believe he said we have a shared vision. We get less of that shared vision and that environmental outcome when we don't avail ourselves of those opportunities, because we draw down the efficiency of this machine, the water board staff. And so if we have a shared vision, we have to sync up at the right opportunities, to achieve that vision. It's on all of us. Collectively, we have to hold all of our feet to the fire, not just the agency's feet. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I add on? I think I echo that, because, appropriate scoping, is really important to the process, so that we have our arms around everything that we can possibly have, and it helps drive proper outcomes that we want to see. So as we develop our inventory overall of looking at TMDLs and matching them, you know, to outcomes in the ag order, I think that's critical as well.
Yeah, and it gets into, you know, a bit of a shift that over recent years our regional board has taken on key regulatory items is to significantly increase the amount of workshops and outreach efforts. We have had listening sessions, you know, we have workshops, and I'm just encouraging everyone, and I know it's hard. We all have our day jobs and, you know, and say, gee, you know, I'm going to burn a half a day going to a workshop or anything, but at least, you know, I think early on it helps for the end product. Yes, Dr. Hunter.
Just one more aspect of that. Yes, attending workshops is the best and most direct, but there is written submittals. There are phone calls that can be made to staff during that public comment period, which allows for these, you know, inconveniences. But again, coming forward earlier is the most helpful to the board in their consideration of what locally, what does it look like? I think staff does as much as they can to assemble the most relevant data, and we do have more robust data sets, and so we're, I think, doing a better job because of those data sets that are gaining and cumulative. But again, you have multiple ways of contributing your expert and personal experience, observing conditions at the location, and that is really strategic for staff to hear from folks that have that kind of personal knowledge. So that's another way to do it.
Sort of my, you know, once in a while reflect on this is the challenge that we have of the ability sometimes to physically attend meetings. You know, if I had a magic stick, and once in a while I'd ask that question to others, you know, to force you thinking out of the box. If I had a magic stick, I would love to see statewide within CalEPA, state and regional boards to have the ability of video conferencing, and, you know, from home you could be a participant. And, you know, I see this is becoming routine in the private sector. So you don't have to travel, and I'm just thinking about how to make it easier for everyone, because it's easier said than done, you know, when I say, well, you should attend these meetings. Well, we all have conflicts and other issues, so kind of, you know, that keeps coming back to me as we, you know, we're supposed to be California, one of the leading states in technology, and, you know, frankly, sometimes I think we're in the Stone Age on how we communicate. Anyway, I got it off my chest, so forgive me for that. So I just want to say I share the pain of some of you stakeholders in the room, you know, and how you struggle often in trying to attend the various meetings and workshops that we have. So that's where I came from. So at this time, do we have any concluding comments from staff?
Sure.
And or executive officer.
Yeah, so I definitely appreciate the great discussion, both the comments as well as the important topics that are touched upon today as far as how key that implementation piece is. And approving this TMDL does not tie our hands for what that implementation looks like. A TMDL develops a plan of what we think implementation will work, and what we do today doesn't limit that going forward. We'll see what happens and see if our proposed implementation plan works or not, and if it doesn't, we have other tools that we can utilize, and the approval itself doesn't limit those options.
Okay. Mr. Robinson?
I was going to say our recommendation is to approve the TMDL.
Okay, so at this time, do I have any further question from my fellow board members? So would anyone entertain?
I will move to approve.
I will second.
And do we have any further discussion?
Question, if I could. Just a clarification point.
Sure.
If a TMDL has an implementation schedule in it of so many years, can the implementing order vary that or change it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a very brief comment. Scoping meetings are important, and hopefully more public goes to them than often they do. But I think this issue brought up during public comment today is so big that it would probably not have mattered much had it been brought up during scoping. The same kind of conversation would have ensued, you know, 6 months ago or a year ago, and we'd probably be right here today. So the comments I heard today, if I had not attended the scoping meeting, I wouldn't have heard them. And so I'm kind of glad that they came here today to speak their piece.
All right, and sure.
And my comment is just that I'm reluctant to seek to give staff direction because we sometimes have a tendency to do that without knowing clearly how much work it's going to entail. But I would certainly love, as we move forward, as Mr. Robertson recommended, as we move forward, reference as we move forward with 4.0 and try and check off whether the ag waiver is going to truly address the however many different ones of these TMDLs rely on it. It would be nice to see a chart that shows for X TMDL. You know, our timeline, our milestones were this, the levels were this when we started, and they're this now. Now, that may be way too much work, so I could envision that being easy or really hard, so I don't know. But that's just something I would love to see, and I'm not asking the board to give staff direction on at this point.
All right, thank you. So no further comments. So we had a motion, we had a second, we had comments. So I would like to move into a roll call vote, please.
Chair Wolf?
Approved.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Member Spontes? Mr. Delgado?
Yes.
Ms. Gray?
Aye.
Mr. Johnston?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, so the motion approved. So at this time, before moving to item four, we will take a 15-minute break, and let's reconvene at in 15 minutes, a little before 10:45. Thank you.